Welcome everybody to Suss It Out. My name is Riddhi Datta and this is my podcast, Sussing Out Sustainability Stories, Ideas, Trends, Advocacy and a whole lot more. Hot minute, I literally mean a hot minute because I graduated, I handed in my thesis, and I just took some time off to enjoy the summer. Socially distanced, of course. Through this hot summer, I also turned 25, which of course came with its own challenges of me going through this quarter life crisis and trying to figure out what I want to do amidst this pandemic situation and graduating and everything. But it also sort of reaffirmed this belief that I have in our generation, which is the millennials and the Gen Z, on how much we can do together. And I might sound cheesy right now, but I really do believe that we are a generation that asks for a space on the table. We ask for space because we deserve it. That being said, this episode is going to be about everything young. I spoke to my dear friend, Marie-Claire Graff. She's a youth advocate and a global change maker based in Switzerland, and she speaks for everything under the sustainability umbrella. She advocates for topics such as sustainable development and the need for ambitious climate action. Internationally, she's currently serving as the global focal point for YOUNGO, the official youth constituency to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. She's been part of Fridays for Future internationally. She co-founded the Sustainability Week International, and she is the UN Youth Climate Champion for Switzerland. While that is most of her international work, she also advocates and works a lot on the national, which is the Swiss front, and on the local level, which is, of course, the city that I currently live in, Zurich. Together, we sat down and talked about her story, all of her work, all the different projects and movements that she's been involved in, co-founded, and is a part of. Climate change is here, and the impacts intensify over the years. The young people of today and children are going to be the ones that suffer the most and see the impacts the most, which is why we spoke about how important it is to include youth on the table in the decision-making process on all levels in order to move towards a better, more sustainable future and in achieving this global sustainability agenda that we do have. So without any further ado, here is Marie-Claire on Suss It Out. Hi Marie, thank you so much for joining me on Suss It Out today.
Hi, great to be here with you.
I love how to look at the screen and look at you as well and say hi. But yeah, okay, let's begin the episode with my favorite question, which I do it on every episode. So on my Instagram, I have this hashtag Think Green It's Friday series, which is basically like a sustainable take on the regular TGIF. And other than the obvious reasons why Friday is amazing for the fact that I look forward to the weekend, now because of the series, it's become even more special for me. Considering you work with Fridays for Future internationally a lot, this is the perfect question. So imagine that you're in a climate strike, it's a Friday, and what's your go-to slogan?
Well, this is a hard question, honestly.
I'm sure you've had many different slogans, but like, what's your current favorite slogan? Let's say that.
Well, on the last climate strike, my sister and I went with the slogan, "The climate is hotter than my boyfriend." I don't know if he likes it, but yeah, this was the latest one.
But it's a cheeky one. It's like fun, but yeah.
Serious.
Serious. Do I mean it? Do I not mean it? At least for the climate change part, yes. But yeah, welcome to Suss It Out. Let's begin the conversation. Let's talk about your, what I like to call as a millennial, a chonky curriculum vitae that you have. As a climate activist, you have a very chonky CV. So you are the global focal point of YOUNGO, the official youth constituency for the UNFCCC. You're the co-founder of Sustainability Week International and the UN Youth Climate Champion for Switzerland. That is a mouthful. While we'll indulge in each of these separately through the entire conversation, I'd like to start off by giving you this. There was supposed to be a USB mic here. Now this joke doesn't work anymore.
But yeah, I'd give you this platform of my MacBook input, audio input, and this audio-based platform. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how did you get to where you are currently?
Yeah, thank you so much. And as you already mentioned, I mean, it's a long and diverse story. Mm-hmm. But everything started when I saw how the glaciers in Switzerland are melting. Mm-hmm. So Switzerland has a lot of mountains, a lot of glaciers. And I was with my family often out already when I was a baby and as a kid. And then there is this one glacier where they're like scientifically have been like putting some small tables where with some annual years, and then you can basically see how the glacier is is going back and reducing mm-hmm. like the mass. And this was very shocking to me, especially because the closer you get to this tiny leftover of the glacier, the further you have to walk. And when you're small, I mean, like, this is almost like an eternity.
How old were you?
Around 8. So my parents told us about the climate crisis and that's why the glaciers are melting. And mm-hmm. then, of course, I could like put the pieces together. I was learning and studying more about this, which also then led me later on to study at DTH environmental sciences and afterwards mm-hmm. political science. And this was so frustrating to me in the first place. I got really frustrated and demotivated and I didn't see how I can make an impact.
Yeah.
Later on, I realized that only... Yeah, while just standing up and doing something and getting out and being active, I can actually overcome this disempoweredness, this feeling tired, feeling frustrated, feeling also anxious and very sad. Mm-hmm. So I started to be active, right? And I started on a local level seeing what can be done in the community, what can be done here at the university. But then also I saw that we need to do much more. I also changed my personal habits, my personal lifestyle, but we need to do much more. So I started to see what can be done on a national level, like where can we put the piece together, where can we invent and create new pieces mm-hmm. And try to connect these, because I really strongly believe that we can only do it if there is like a movement, if there are like many people together going in the same direction with a diversity, but like we have to be coordinated.
Yeah.
And then went internationally. So this is a little bit about the whole story.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely love that. So would you say your activism started very early on from finding out about the glaciers at the age of 8, and already in school you were in that place that you wanted to do something about it?
Yeah, I think I realized pretty early, because I was often in nature and saw these changes, and also my family, we grew up trying to be sustainable, mm-hmm. so eating very like little meat. Going on bike vacation, not flying too far, trying to repair everything, not buying new things. So I have been growing up with this, you know, and then I like later on went out to the city and then saw like, oh, actually this is not what is considered as normal, you know, like people are just buying, throwing it away, or the food waste, have a very excessive lifestyle. And I was like, oh, well, there is something wrong, you know, and then I started to realize this. And yeah, I think it came pretty early. And this also gave me a long time to think about the whole process and trying a lot of different things. And yeah.
Yeah. So let's explore all your work. And we'll do that on 3 levels. Right before this recording this podcast, we were just talking about how Marie told me that her journey has been from like a local, then grew into a national level, and then onto an international level. So that's exactly what we do, which is also on your website, which I will link with this eventually when it's like fully done, so that people can check that out and see all of your amazing work as well. So let's start on the local level. Let's start by talking about your work with the Student Sustainability Commissions of both ETH and University of Zurich, and how that is also a part of Sustainability Week Zurich, which was the first thing that you started and you co-founded. So tell us a little bit about this, and what do these platforms stand for? What are the daily activities, movements, projects, kind of projects that you guys work on? And how did you start this as a co-founder?
Exactly. So when I moved for my studies to Zurich, and I quickly realized that there is this institution, you know, and there are like different layers, but there is like the sustainability is really missing. It's missing in the educational part. Of course, I studied environmental science, so I have to do a lot with sustainability. But what about the rest? But also when we talk about the research, how much research is actually done for a better world. But also when it comes to the campus, I mean, you have still a lot of emissions. And for me, like the universities are like, there you have all the wisdom, all the knowledge. It's like the center of intelligence, kind of, for me. Like mm-hmm. you have like the world's knowledge is around here. And we have so many brilliant people here who did a lot of science around the climate crisis and other crises. And then this is like this weird correlation. Why are we not doing more? Why is a university not like a lighthouse of society and of Switzerland, and I mean in general, and really acting according what they are teaching and mm-hmm. researching? So this was very weird for me, and that's also why I joined the sustainability, the Student Sustainability Commission. It's a group of students who are trying to push sustainability on all different levels mm-hmm. within the institution, because sometimes you have a more or less heard voice in the system, mm-hmm. but at least you can do events. And also this is what we then did with the other universities together, that we organized this. I mean, it started already before I came, the Sustainability Week here in Zurich, to really create a momentum. We wanted to create a positive momentum, showing the diversity, showing what like the research, the lectures, and what the universities are doing, and giving all these voices also a platform. But mm-hmm. also, it's not enough time. We cannot only educate ourselves and raising awareness for this, it's too late, because science mm-hmm. also telling us we have very little time left. So we also have demands to the universities mm-hmm. On having a sustainability report that we can actually see what they are doing, having a sustainability office, reducing the flight emissions, having vegetarian and vegan menus, having sustainability in the education, doing divestment. I mean, a lot of these things that we believe that the university should be in the future. So this is all around the Sustainability Week in Zurich. And then we had a really big, great Sustainability Week in 2017. And then there was this lady from the Swiss television and radio who was saying, like, guys, you did an awesome job. I want to bring this international radio. So the week after, on Monday, we were invited for this daily interview, which is mm-hmm. the most heard interview in Switzerland. And, well, the interview was live, and I told no one, but my parents and everyone listened to it. So it's a bit weird. And then, honestly, like, some hours after and the whole week, there were some emails from people around Switzerland, professors, uh-huh. universities, and students, like, we also want to be part of the sustainability, yeah. but we didn't have the project and the team and everything going, because it was only here. But then over summer, we established the National Sustainability, because that's then how also I started to see what else can be done on a bigger mm-hmm. level. But in general, I think Zurich is a great place. We have a lot of student movements going,
yeah.
But it needs to be strengthened also. Like, there's a lot of, we will talk about this later, on the bottom-up mm-hmm. movement and how we have to match it with the top-down.
Mm-hmm.
There is something going on, but
there has to yeah. be a match that has to be made.
Exactly.
And structure is what has to be set forward. Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely love that. So quickly before we wrap up the local part of your work, let's talk about the, pardon my German again, Neujahr Get Together Basel, which is New Year Get Together Basel. She gave me a thumbs up. I'm very happy about this. My German is working. Okay. You're the co-president, and it is considered as the biggest networking event for women in the region. Tell us a little bit about it. What do you do in the event?
Exactly. Sustainability also has a lot to do with the social aspect and women empowerment. And unfortunately, very often this social part is a little bit left out. But I personally focus a lot on it. And also being a young female in this world, I also have been seeing the challenges we are encountered with when people are not taking young people, especially young female people, serious and not giving the spot. I mean, this is happening in academia, but it's also happening in the business world. And much of it also comes that female people don't have the same network as our male counterparts are having. Mm-hmm. And we also see that, especially in the private sector, but also, yeah, in the public sector, a lot of job opportunities just given out to the network. And if you don't have this network, it's very hard mm-hmm. To get into positions. I mean, like, for example, CEOs in Switzerland, under 2% of the CEO level people are female. So it is a huge challenge. And also, especially in the region where I'm coming from, in the north of Switzerland, in Basel, I mean, we have a thriving economy, we have mm-hmm. a lot of public institutions, but very little female leaders. And this was always very striking to me. And then there was a woman who was setting this up, and then she handed this over to a friend, to a young friend of mine and me, and we are now organizing this network with the aim of bringing female leaders from this region together, mm-hmm. or also female who want to become leader or who are already very involved, to give them the connecting platform. So basically, we are organizing the event that people, female leader, can come together, and then they can make connections, because we think that this is a very important, empowering step that we can empower ourselves.
It's like a big girls' night out. Like a big event. Yeah,
kinda, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, so that we all talk about it and then sorry. Yeah, love that. Absolutely love that. But that brings me to another question that while you were talking about this, what does gender equality look like in Switzerland? You already mentioned that in terms of the CEO levels, it's still pretty doesn't look good for us because it's only 2% of women that are there in the position. But overall in the political system, how does it look? And I mean, in institutions, I would still say, at least, for example, environmental sciences department at ETH, it's still okay. There are still enough women. I mean, the gender equality is still fine. But if you go to computer sciences, of course, it's not. There are like 3 or 4 women in like the entire class. So give me your overall view of what you think, how good or bad Switzerland is doing in terms of gender equality.
So Switzerland is often from the outside seen as a country who is doing good.
Perfect. But yeah. First world. Yeah.
When you're inside, actually, you see the challenges. I mean, we have a huge gender pay gap, which for me is something which should be like not possible in a country like Switzerland. There we have still a very male-dominated private sector, but also when it comes to public sector, I mean, of course, we are trying to get better, but also in academia, but also in other governmental sector. Also in the parliament, we have still very little female. I mean, we still don't have the 50-50. We are trying hard to get there. It of course, takes time, but there is still a huge gap. But also when it comes, for example, to the family, there is still very often the system makes it impossible that that like I could work a little bit at in a position while having a family next to it, because it's like, okay, either you work 100% or you go home. But also like the tax system and so on, there are like a lot of very there are regulations which are from the last century and they need to be updated in order to have a modern life where we can actually as women also be empowered. So there are a lot of different challenges we have to overcome, and very unfortunate, they also need more female empowered leadership, you know. So it's like a chicken egg problem. So what comes first? That's why I think like we need everywhere more women empowerment, also to solve the sustainability and the climate crisis. I mean, this is they're all interlinked and intertwined.
Yeah, absolutely love that. Now, coming to the end of like the local part of your work, you are quite the citizen of Zurich indeed, right? Which, if I'm not wrong, is also one of the awards that you got. You are the female citizen of Zurich. So tell us a little bit about that. What was that award for, and like how did the whole process go, and how amazing does it feel to be the female citizen of Zurich?
Yeah, so they most of the cantons, they have an office on female on issues, and they in Zurich do a very cool mentorship program. Actually, they match young female who are interested in politics with a female politician, either on a cantonal or on the national level. And I have been matched with Mattea Meyer. She's from the Social Party, and actually because yesterday she was elected as the president of the co-president of the Social Party of Switzerland. So yeah, she's really cool, and she's very young and very dynamic. So basically this mentorship program was matching young women, young like girls, and with female politicians, and I have been very active. And they every year I award for female leader in different sectors who have been very vocal about topics like female women topic, but also other topics. For example, I was very strong about like the interrelation between climate change and women and youth empowerment, and that's why I was awarded. And for me, I mean, the awards is just giving is just encouraging that the topics which are mostly not spoken of in the media, on the mainstream media, that they are getting heard. And I think this is the most important, that we can bring out the message and encouraging especially other girls and female leaders to go this path.
So taking it up to the next level, we're going to move to all of Marie's national work. But before we do that, I do want to talk about how your work has gone from like the local level to the national level. And I mean, being a Swiss person in a system which is a direct democracy, how do you think, how far does all of your work that has worked on the local level been translated on the national level? What's the correlation between how this bottom-up approach is important towards systemic change?
Absolutely. So since we are, as you have already been mentioning, I mean, like there's like a very federalistic system. So a lot of things can actually be changed. What I think is amazing can be changed on the local level. So we can actually make real change here in Zurich at the university. You don't always have to go to the national level because they might not know the local circumstances. And I think this is the power we can actually use in our way, right? So when we have students, for example, or those kind of the other groups who are changing in different cantons on a local level different things, and if we then add this all up together and make a report on the national, we can say like, look, X amount of students have been changing this or demanding this, and now we want, and actually universities, for example, responded, and now we want that you are making this change mm-hmm. on a national level. And I think this is the power we can use from us. And this is really this bottom-up, but it's a coordinated bottom-up approach, mm-hmm. and then triggering the needed national legislations or national support regulations, that this can be even more powerful. And I think that is what we need for the systemic change. So it needs to come from the bottom up. It needs to have a vast amount of young people pushing for it, but then we need the response, because otherwise, like, it's energy going nowhere. So mm-hmm. there needs to be this political response. That's also why I think it's so important that young people are getting political, because most of the issues we are having, they are political in nature.
Mm-hmm.
So of course it's good to have social movements, and it's really important, but we need a political message, and we need to push for this political message to be implemented.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense when you think about it, right? And I think from your work as well, when I was reading it, how you started, and I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but did you start on the local level and then realize, oh, if we get this coordinated, then it goes to the next level? And did yeah. that change in your thinking, how you stepped up every single time you had these newer experiences and you realized that there was another stepping stone to another world?
Absolutely. Honestly, it was like a stair. You start with yourself, right? You try to change like certain habits, like showering a little bit less, and like eating habits and traveling habits, and
yeah.
turning off the light. And then you just realize, okay, this is all not going to be enough, right?
Yeah.
Then you, okay, maybe your family, your friends, your community, you know, university, and then like, okay, this is great, but there are so many other universities around the world, mm-hmm. or like in Switzerland or in the city. So you're going the next level. You start with another universities around you and other students, and then, well, there are some limiting national regulations, so you go on the national level. And this then also, of course, changes how you have to think about it, because mm-hmm. there are other groups, there are other institutions, other entities you have to target. I mean, other languages coming in Switzerland, but also on an international level. So you have to change the approach depending on who you're speaking to. You have to change also the messaging. Despite we always want, for example, the same, let's say, like, we want to have more education, sustainability in the education sector. Depending on who you're talking to, you have to have a different approach. And I think this messaging is really important. So you need to be very strategic, I think, for this.
Great.
Think on different levels.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely love how you mentioned languages, because that properly brings me to my next question. How many languages do you speak? If you say Romansh right now, I'd be so impressed and so surprised.
I'm not speaking Romansh.
Oh, no.
Sorry.
I love asking all of my Swiss friends this question. Please tell me, how many of the languages do you speak? Yeah.
So, well, I grew up, my mother and my grandmother, they were talking Hungarian, because mm-hmm. I'm half Hungarian. And I have never learned the language properly. But, you know, when you grew up and like your mother and your grandmother talking it.
Yeah.
So I understand it. I can speak it. I cannot write it. Then I, of course, grew up Swiss German in school. You speak the High German. Then you learn French, you learn English. I learned Chinese when I was in high school. I'm not fluent in Chinese anymore, unfortunately, but it's like one on my to-do list to get fluent again in Chinese. And at the moment, I'm learning a local African language called Chui. This is the local language of Ghana, because my partner is from Ghana.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, this will be the next language challenge.
Well, that is so cool. That is one too many languages for me already. Because I'm like, yeah, that's a lot of languages. But I'm sure, being a Swiss person, you know already in Switzerland how many, like, there are four basic languages, would you say?
So there are four national languages.
Yeah.
So there's Italian, French, Romansh, and the German.
Yeah.
Whereas the Swiss German actually is not an official language. So we have to
tell me about it, girl.
But then it's like English coming in, which is spoken a lot. So you have to be multilingual anyway in Switzerland.
Okay. So, I mean, we spoke about the Sustainability Week Zurich. So now let's talk about Sustainability Week Switzerland and the Sustainability Week business. Let's talk about both of them and tell me, how are they different from each other and how they're different from the local versions of these events that you do?
Exactly. So I have been mentioning before that we had the Sustainability Week here in Zurich, which is the biggest city in Switzerland, but then a lot of interest sparked all over the country. And thought, okay, this is great, because there is so much need and interest out there, so we have to respond. This is a big opportunity for us to make our voice heard. So over the summer of 2017, a group of students here at ETH, we have been sitting together, writing some content, writing some like financial proposals. And actually we got the financial grant, which then we spent of giving like all the universities all across Switzerland some kickstart money.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the concept didn't change much. I mean, it's really the Sustainability Week. We have Zurich, the concept we have been spreading all over the country. And I mean, the nitty-gritty details, of course, like every mm-hmm. institution is a little bit different, the languages, the size of the universities, the departments, the fields. But our concept was, I think it's good because it's very simple. I mean, like having this 1 week momentum with events and demand is very simple. So all these universities across, I mean, now we are at all universities in Switzerland and most of the higher education institutions, we are reaching 96% of all students. So like it's really all over the place in Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
And we could actually reach this already within half a year, but have been strengthening over the last 3 years. So the concept is not too much different, just that the Sustainability Week Switzerland is the network, bringing them all together, organizing some national kickoff events, debriefing events, bringing the students together. And then the Sustainability Group Business is a different concept, but the same idea that we want to bring in the power of young people to drive sustainability changes within an institution, but it's a private sector company.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is still having a 1 week momentum in the company, mm-hmm. which is led by students and the employees jointly, with some raising awareness part and some demand parts.
Mm-hmm.
So there is, it's the same idea, but it's a different approach and different messaging as we have been talking before. So you cannot have the same messaging in a private company. And there was actually quite a lot of interest, but then COVID came, so it got a little bit challenging because now everyone is in home office. Nevertheless, I think the message we are having that we need a resilient economy, a sustainable one, building back better together, and all of this, I mean, these hashtags, they're very important for the economy because we got this very unique chance now of
mm-hmm.
doing something different. It's always hard to change a running system, especially in the private sector. But if you get like the emergency brake pulled for you,
mm-hmm.
and you have to rethink everything what you have been doing, this is what COVID did, and that's why I think it's now a really crucial time of having also more sustainability weeks and just sustainability approaches in the company world anyway, and having also young people driving this agenda.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that in the private sector there has been, considering COVID has come as a shock to them because they never thought that there would be none of us ever thought that there would be this emergency brake that is pulled. Do you think that that has led to more interest in sustainability and sustainable development in general?
So I think at the moment, most companies are still like in a shock mode,
mm-hmm.
like survival, yeah. You know, like, okay, how do we get over the next month? Because I mean, of course they have like some like emergency, like side money, but
mm-hmm.
it's not lasting for 6, 7, 8, whatever months, right? So I think at the moment, everyone is like kind of in a survival mode and they are not yet thinking about like the building back green, more
mm-hmm.
sustainable together. But it will come and it must come. And also I think it's really important that the politicians who are now giving like all like the bailouts and like the financial support, that there are conditions. Yes, you get the money and yes, we're going to support you, but you have to be compliant with the SDGs, with the Paris Agreement, and like also, for example, female and youth empowerment. So you cannot, what has been driving us into this crisis is, amongst other things, is like our unsustainable style of how we have been doing it, like business and how the economy was going. And to avoid like further crises like this, we have to change something, and
right.
this needs to come with like conditions also from policy.
Mm-hmm. Love that. Talking about another national thing that you are like famously known for, so you're the vice president for the Swiss Youth for Climate. What does the role entail? What do you do, and how have the Swiss youth actually shaped or had an effect on Switzerland's climate policy?
Yeah, very, very good question, and it's so relevant. So Swiss Youth for Climate was born back in 2015 when some young people from Switzerland wanted to go to the climate conference, the United Nations Framework Convention, COP 21 in Paris, because there was the Paris Agreement negotiated, but there was no Swiss youth organization for it, and there
mm-hmm.
was then no badges, and without a badge you can't go to the conference. So this was the struggle. So some friends have been setting up Swiss Youth for Climate, and I joined a little bit later. So the idea back then and still today was of connecting young people to the international conferences and be a pragmatic and very ambitious voice, like the voice of young people, like
mm-hmm.
the drive we are having, and also the science we are seeing, and I mean everything, like the facts. I'm bringing this to the climate policy level and being like a like the conjunction between the policymakers and young people. So it has been, there has been a huge development over the last 5 years. So 5 years ago, like they were like very, very critical, like not really interacting a lot. So it was kind of like us begging for getting a voice, for being there and being heard. And over the turn of the last years, they have been more open. They have been inviting us. They have been listening to us. They have been taking some of our ideas into consideration. And I think, at least for me, like a strong moment was when they, exactly a little bit more than a year ago, they asked me if I want to be part of the official Swiss delegation for the 25th World Climate Conference. Mm-hmm. And for me, this was a moment, not because I could go there, which I would never even have imagined to be there, but they are taking young people so serious, and mm-hmm. that they're actually taking them into an official delegation where you're negotiating on behalf of the country of Switzerland. And then also I could like negotiate on the topics I was passionate about, education and gender topics, and I could actually bring in my voice and the voice of young people in Switzerland directly. So there are ways, but it's a long way. Mm-hmm. You need to be extremely competent about mm-hmm. what you're talking. So there's a lot of education. And unfortunately, it's not the same education as you get, for example, at ETH. So like when I was studying about all these facts, this is great. But you cannot really do something with exactly this knowledge when you go into policies. Right. You have to translate it. That's also why I was later on studying political science at the University of Zurich, because this was, for me, it was like missing. I never got this mm-hmm. knowledge. So young people can make a change here in Switzerland. They can be heard at the national level, but it's an extremely like slow and long and also draining, frustrating process. Yeah. That's why I think it's really important to build up this momentum and join force of groups who have been like here for longer. So I'm like very often coordinating with other groups like WWF and many groups who have been here for the last 20, 30, 50, 100 years, who also have like kind of a legacy, who have their network. And I think mm-hmm. it's really important for young people, because we simply don't have time for another 5 years to wait to get our voice heard, you know?
Right.
So Swiss Youth for Climate is doing this all over the country, also on a local level, but also mainly on a national and then on an international level. And I'm confident that we will continue having this voice. But I mean, it's all about speed, you know, like the mm-hmm. urgency.
How
speed,
quickly like. They get the job done, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I love that, because I think one of my friends, I don't know if you met her, she was a part of the delegation as well, Isabella.
Yeah.
Isabella and I started our master's together. Like, we had a couple of courses together and stuff like that. And I guess that's what made a lot of sense, because she was interning with the federal office.
Exactly.
And that's how she got into the as a part of the delegation, because that was her internship. And that you got into the program as well, because they realized that the voice that you have and the experience that you have in terms of diplomacy and like just advocacy towards this issue that has to be talked about and should be talked about all the time. And I guess giving you guys a space is a great step. Like, in comparison to a lot of other countries, for example, how in India it's quite hard as a youth, as a person who's young, to be a part of anything which is substantial, because our system is not rather direct. But it's getting somewhere, right? The whole point is we have a lot of space for improvement. And like Marie said, we got to quicken this process. We don't have enough time. We need more voices of us represented. Mm. And that's what we have to add to. Let's move on to the international work that you've done, right? Now, I wanted to release this episode on the 24th of October, which is celebrated as the UN Day, which is because like on 24th of October, what year is it? 1945, the United Nations officially came into existence, right? You have worked with the UN through many different programs, formats, events. So let's talk about that entire process of you working with the UN, right? So according to you, why does the world need a platform like the United Nations for international diplomacy and cooperation?
I think what makes the UN very special is that it's the only place we have where all the countries, and literally like all the countries, are coming together peacefully mm-hmm. and talking about something substantial. Or if the outcome is substantial, not, it's another thing. But at least they're coming together, and there is no other platform where they are all coming together and they all have an equal voice.
Yeah.
So we are giving like the small island developing nation, we give them the same voice as the US. And this can be very tricky, of course, for the mm-hmm. for the wealthy and like nations. But this is very important. And that's why for me there's like, we need the UN, and we need it like even more and even stronger for the future, but it needs to change and it needs to respond to the current crisis, because it was born, as you've been mentioning, out of the wars. But today we have very different wars and we have the very different crises. So it's absolutely needed, absolutely crucial, but it needs to restructure, reform, and be a little bit more agile and dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Love that answer. I always, anyone who has ever worked with the UN, I love asking them, what do they really think about? Why do we need UN? But like you rightly said, that's the only place that we as a world come together peacefully. Right, so you were also selected as a UN Youth Climate Champion for Switzerland. Besides the celebrity status that you have now, how did this happen and how was the whole process for you?
Yeah, so the UN last year organized the Global Climate Action Summit. So this was to highlight the urgency of this race we have to win. This was also the slogan, the race we have to win.
This was in New York.
Exactly. Yeah. This was just during the United Nations General Assembly last year in September in New York. So it was on the 23rd of September. And they're like all the heads of states came together, but they also realized exactly what you mentioned. We have to transform the UN. So like we cannot only have the heads of states coming together and debating about this and maybe some private sector people, but we also need young people. So what they have been doing in advance, they have been selecting from 100 countries, one young person each, and then they awarded them as with this climate champion of the dedicated country, and they have also, we have been awarded with a green ticket, meaning that we could join this climate action conference, so the summit, but also there was a prior youth summit before. So again, for me, what was the most important is like having 100 young people coming from all over the world with all the different challenges coming together about this one cause, because my view and my experience are very different than from another country. And I think this is what is strengthening us to be there, but also to listen, to report back, so we can also see like, okay, what are our leaders talking about? And then we can like do a background check. Is this like what they're doing on the ground? We can also maybe see like, oh, there's like a very ambitious country. Maybe this is something our country could as well do. And I think this is just important that it's also getting like out there. It's getting publicized. People know about it. And we can also critically look at our leaders and like, okay, like you committed to something. What is going on back home? Because sometimes, you know, like the UN is a great place to show off for countries, but then what are they doing back home? So I think there are many, many different responsibilities coming when you have the chance to attend this UN events. So it's not only for you to be there and like, you know, like, I mean, it's a fancy place to be, but you also have a great responsibility, especially to the other people in your community, in your country, to report back and make their voice also heard when you have the chance to speak, if it's like doing interventions, to make not only your voice, but make a collective voice of young people heard.
Was this also the event that you have that picture of you with the Secretary General? Was that?
No, this was actually later on. This was actually in the beginning of this year, just before COVID hit the world. Since the whole year, they have like this UN 75 anniversary celebrations, and then they're doing a lot of these dialogues about this six crises, and one of the six major crises we are at the moment facing is the climate crisis. So the United Nations Secretary General has been doing dialogues around the world, and so he was in Geneva for the Human Rights Council, and they have been doing a dialogue with six young people representing like one of these crises. I mean, I'm not representing the crisis, but I'm like fighting this crisis. This was actually when he was in Geneva and I was there responding to the questions they have like been doing a global survey. But yeah, I mean, it's not looking too good in terms of the climate crisis, unfortunately.
Well, that's not looking good, but the picture was really good, though. Like, it's a really nice candid, and I'm like, wow, Marie is shining. But I do think from when you got the green ticket, like, media came for you. Like, in Switzerland, like, you grew as, like, a person, and your work, all of that was shown, and I'm so proud of you, to be honest. Like, I'm just so glad that I met you through Artsy, like, last year, sometime before all of this happened. And I'm just like, I'm just so happy that I know this person, because I've actually known you for like 2 years, let's say, because I've been around at ETH and I know what kind of work goes on and who's involved with the, you know, all sorts of youth movements that happen, and I know your work, but like, I'm just glad that I got to personally know you, and that's always super nice to
Thank you.
Like a friend who's so bloody cool. So coming to Yungos, so you are the global focal point for Yungo, which is the youth, the official youth constituency to the UN Climate Change Secretariat. So what does Yungo do? Tell us about how you guys have a link to the secretariat, what kind of framework and processes are there, and how does one get involved if they want to be a part of Yungo?
Yeah, so again, Yango is a little bit of a weird word, but it's actually coming from youth and NGO, so it's like it's a mix. So we are the international space for young people to get engaged with the United Nations and especially the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. Because as well, the Secretariat actually already, when it was established back in 1992, they realized, despite the UN is a governmental driven process, so only the governments have a say when there are decisions taken, we cannot do it alone. So they realize that they need other stakeholder groups being there. It can be the private sector, it can be research, it can be farmers, indigenous peoples, local governments, but it's also the young people. So they have 9 so-called these constituencies or these major groups representing the voice of civil society or of other groupings in the official negotiations. And so what Yango is doing, so throughout the year, we do a lot of youth empowerment, bringing young people and connecting them with different opportunities. There are like a lot of different meetings going on. I mean, there's like the big COP and there's the intermediate session, but there are like, honestly, there are countless meetings on different topics, for example, on gender issues, on adaptation, on mitigation, on finance. And it's so crucial because when we are at COP, I mean, like, it's so busy. You have been there as well. It's so busy, and it's very hard for young people to make their voice heard. But actually, where we can make a change, as I've been mentioning before, like, you can make the change on the local level and then coordinate it all. We can have quite a big stake on these expert meetings, for example, on the smaller, like, get-togethers, because there are less people, they're more inclined to listen to you. And if we then strategically do our intervention at this point, and then, like, it's all building up to the big meeting, and then we can say, like, we have been working on here and here and here and here, and we put this all strategically together, we can actually make a change on the bigger level, and we can also influence the countries, of course. So it's, again, something very strategic, and it's also... It can be very frustrating because it's a very, very slow process. It's on a consensus level. So like all the nations have to agree. But I think what we as young people are very good at, because we don't have something like in a business, you're representing a business, right? As young people, you're representing us or our NGO. But we can just truly speak from our heart. And I think this is also what is missing at the UN. That's what we can bring in. Like, we can come in and be as radical as we want. We can be as open and bold and blunt as we want. So we want climate justice. We want ambitious targets, because you're stealing our future. And we can say this, and for many other people, it's not possible. So I think we are enormously important for this international conference. And that's exactly what Yango is doing. We are bringing young people, we're empowering young people, especially from the global south, from countries who haven't been, or like young people who couldn't attend like these sessions due to like various different issues, like legal, like visa, but also humanitarian issues, and making their voice heard throughout the year through different meetings at the subsidiary body meeting, but also then at the big world climate conferences. And we do this through different programs, and how you can join, it's very, very simple. Honestly, like there is a form. It's at the moment a little bit hard because we just restructured our website. But you can basically search for Yango membership, and there is a sign up form, and it's very easy. Just fill this form and you will get added to a mailing list. So we are all connected. There are like 1,000 organizations part of Yango, growing on a daily basis, who are part of this mailing list. This is our central, like, where we all come together, you know. And then when you have the chance, I mean, apply. There are like different possibilities to then go attend the meetings. And at the moment, everything is virtual, which makes it also a little bit more inclusive, so more people can join, especially also from not too privileged regions of the world, and can attend these meetings and make their voice heard. And I really hope that we can bring in as many young people as possible to the next climate conference in Glasgow in the UK.
It's a great place to network with people, because I was shortly a part of it last year while I was just like trying to get into it. It can get overwhelming when start off, because you're just like, there is so much happening. And if there's one advice, just don't do it when you have something else going on as well, because that's exactly what happened to me. But overall, it's a great space to talk about what you want to work with or find the right fit for you even, right? Like, not just the people, but it's also the kind of topics that you are passionate about. Because even in sustainability and climate change and climate action in general, there could be specific things that you're into. And there's a place for everyone at Jungo. At least that's what I think.
Yeah, there's so many different working groups. I mean, like, you can be interested in adaptation, tree planting, and human rights, education, gender. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many diverse finances and so many diverse topics we are having and we are creating. And I think this is also the strength we are having, that we can like really go by our passion. But what you've been mentioning is actually, I think, the major point why young people are not engaged, because it can be overwhelming, because it can be frustrating. There is so much going on. There's so many UN abbreviation, UN language. It can be really draining because you just simply don't understand. Honestly, the first time when I joined an international conference back in 2017, I have been really preparing. I have been reading all the documents I could find. I actually even read the Paris Agreement, and like, I don't know why, but I have been reading it. I have been reading so much, and I really thought, like, now I'm like going there and I can like really make a change, and I can. And then I went there, you know, and I couldn't understand. I like, my English was maybe also not the best, but anyway, I just couldn't understand what they've been talking. Mm-hmm. And it was so frustrating. I have been there for 1 week and I was just running around. I was hungry and I was tired because it's you always like come short with eating. but it's so hard and so frustrating when you just go there and you have this opportunity and you can't make sense out of it. Mm-hmm. But then I think the point is, like, you have to stay and you have to go through it. And it's like a down phase, and it's been draining, but it's going up, you know, like there is a point. And I think that the challenge then comes that you have to focus on one of the topics, right, and just follow something, and then when you get this you can move on. But if you try to do everything, you will be lost. And as you have mentioned, there is for everyone, there is something. So the first step is to find it and then get into it, and then it will be
amazing. I mean, once you get past that overwhelming wall, then it's just this amazing world of opportunities and experiences that you have when it comes to Jungo. But I mean, while Marie sort of explained the kind of work Jungo does in just terms of how you guys are connected to the secretariat, when I interned at UN Climate Change Secretariat in Bonn, this was my experience as well, because I worked on the Climate Weeks, which was the first time they were doing it, because they were called the Carbon Forums before, which was very like, topics were very carbon related, whereas mm-hmm. we wanted to make it more broader and sort of align them to the summit in New York. So the Climate Weeks were like sort of formed, where we did it in three regions. It was Africa, Asia Pacific, and Latin America and the Caribbean. My internship was with the Africa Climate Week, and I realized how important it was, especially in the continent, the voice of youth, and how important it is for the UN, UNFCCC, to include that in all levels of its programs. Because when we were even just brainstorming on what kind of thematic streams that we want and overlaps, the word youth was a buzzword that was used in every format. And I was talking to Marie about this before as well. Like, I was in constant touch with Clara and Yukratna through the whole process, through Adriana, who has now moved out of the UNFCCC. But yeah, it's quite intense. And I did see that maybe on the international level, it's harder to get that many more youth voices. But on the local, national fronts, continental fronts, or these zones fronts, it's really helpful. It gets to a level where the voices are heard and they are actually used in the kind of programs structure even, you know. So it's quite interesting to see this entire unraveling of how youth is involved at the UN. But this has always been my standard question for anyone who works through the youth end with the UN. Do you think that often, not just the UN, in any international setting, do you think that there is this thing where they call youth representatives to talk about things just because it's extravagant, and that they need to save face and show that the youth is important and has to be heard? Or do they actually take what we say seriously and do something about it?
I think this is very important. I mean, I have been, when I got like opportunities, like, question myself, is this like only now like to show off and say like, oh, nice, like you can do a selfie and a picture, and like, and they can post it like on their own social media. So like, oh, we actually have been taking this voice into consideration. Do they actually listen to you and change something? So I mean, to see if this isn't only like an one shot, or if this is like something continuous, I think it's about the process. Is there a good lead up? Is there like, is the event, and then there's a good follow up? If there is no follow up, I mean, like, you can already go in like, this was only like for the nice pictures and for showing off. And I mean, there is a structural approach through Jungo and through the secretariat of having the youth voice heard. It also developed a lot over the last years. I've been mentioning in the beginning, there was the youth was not there. And then over the year, there was like, okay, we have like maybe a speech by a young person.
Mm-hmm.
And now they try to more structurally really involve the young people in the programs and making their voice heard. There are always, of course, good and bad examples. As always, it's for everyone a learning process. But I think what we now what now is the next step is really having the young people in decision making, because mm-hmm. this is like all over the world is like missing. So even if young people are maybe there in like in some side events and in some forums and whatever, if young people cannot make their voice heard through the decision making process, it will always be something like outside. It's like always something which is not getting into the core of like mm-hmm. our decision. And I think that's what we need to change. And it's very hard because decision making is again like a very slow and long lasting process. And it cannot normally change on a very quick basis, but we are in a crisis, so we have to change this. So to answer the question, so yes, there are good examples, and we have been working on many, like with many very enthusiastic people who have been taking young people serious. But to really change the course of where we are going, the young people need to be sitting actually at the table in the governments and need to then have the opportunity to go to the international conferences and need to have a mandate for negotiation and need to have a mandate for taking decisions. And there I'm not seeing, unfortunately, too much progress.
Mm-hmm.
And this is definitely something we have to strengthen. And I think it's also probably the hardest part, because it's basically affecting you in the very core. And it can question, like when you're old in the government, it can question your own position and what you have been doing. And I think this is the hardest, that you're facing, that you have to question yourself what you have been doing over the last years. But we have to get there.
Yeah. Absolutely love that answer. I relate to that so much, because, you know, I always think about back at home in India as well, if you have to be a part of any governmental processes, first of all, it's really hard to get into it, because this whole UPSC exam is, anyone who's listening and is from India would sort of know how difficult this is, and the clearance rate of that exam is very little as well. But when you do get there, it's like any political on a national level system requires you to be at least 30 years of age. And that's, I mean, that's still the middle age-ish end of roots. I mean, I'm not saying people 30 are old. That's not what I'm trying to say at all. But I'm just saying, because there are, for some reason, there's this whole thing that young people don't know enough. But to be honest, we know so much. And we come from a place of a different, fresher experience and perspective, which is so important. Because whatever actions and whatever decisions that you are taking today, those are the ones that are going to affect us for a very, very long time, and longer than it'll affect the current people that are making these decisions, right? So that's super important. But I mean,
we maybe not have the language experience, of course, but we are the generation with the best access to education. We have the latest science. Honestly, like when you're here and you get like the scientists talking about the recent science, I mean, like no one can know it before us, because we are basically getting like right away from like the lab. So that's why I think like it's so important. I mean, we have to have an equal match between experience and like seeing what was failing. Maybe this is maybe not failing now, but anyway, we need the experienced wise people. They might be old, but we need exactly the same amount of young people who are coming in with a new drive, with new passion, with new directions, with also new concepts. I mean, like for example, climate justice, a concept the older people might not know, and this is not,
or understand. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. This is not bad, because they have been living and growing up in a different area, but we need these people as well, and that's why we need equally balanced, like we talked about gender before, but we also need like something like this gender balance. We need something in the age balance, and this is like very, very unbalanced all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so on a lighter note, we've talked about everything that you've done, the UN, how youth is important, all of that. So let's switch it up and make it like a little lighter and a little more fun, let's say. So I thought it would be fun for us to indulge in this visual sort of exercise and convey it on this audio-based platform, because the irony just doesn't leave me. But one of my favorite cartoons from when I was a kid, like back in the 2000s, was The Jetsons. Have you watched The Jetsons?
No, actually I grew up without a TV.
A television? Oh my God. What was that like? But you know what? I know a lot of people. Actually, one of my other guests on the podcast also grew up without a television. So I've always find it so interesting how, like, you know, tell me, how was that different, first of all?
Well, actually, because when you know growing up, when you're not, when there is no TV, I mean, you don't miss it because you don't have it.
Exactly. So, I mean, you can't miss something you don't have.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, only later on I realized that others have been seeing some like series and I just didn't know, right?
Yeah.
And then my grandma had a TV, so like sometimes when we went to her, we could like watch. But like, I mean, we were not watching like, I don't know.
Too much of it or
yeah, I mean, it's like very short, like some hours, like a week or mm-hmm. bi-weekly. But I mean, this actually led that we were like way more outside. I mean, we have been playing like in the forest and we have been going out to the like small rivers and mm-hmm. playing on the field and like doing a lot of gardening. So I think like I didn't miss it. And actually now I really like that we didn't have it because this made us like going out and...
It gives you a special edge, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a different upbringing.
Being in nature.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so the reason why I brought up the cartoons was because in the Jetsons, it's like this, it's this world from, I don't even know, 2050s, 20 whatever. And essentially like the family, they travel in these, you know, space cars. Like they have like mm-hmm. a bubble top space cars and that's those are their cars, right? And for me, that was like such a big thing because I was like, oh my God, 2050 is going to look like that. We're going to have like space cars all the time. And, you know, when you're in school and then they ask you in the 2000s, when they ask you, okay, write an essay on what do you think the world will be like in 2050 or what's your vision 2020 like or something like that, that would always creep into it. Somehow my little brain thought that these space cars are so easily achievable. In 20 years, we're going to have like space cars. But my question is there something specific like that that you also had when you were a kid, when you thought of the year 2050 or the year 2020?
Mm. So since I was not growing up with like a TV and was not exposed to this, I think that like what I envisioned that is really because I grew up on the countryside in Switzerland with a lot of forest, that there is that like everything is like green and like and there is a lot mm-hmm. of nature, a lot of biodiversity. And I do really, really hope that we have this, so like whenever I would have kids or the next generation, that they could also experience this clear nature that you can just drink from like a small like a river, mm-hmm. that you can just go out and play in the forest and then you see like some animals just passing by. And so like my vision would be very like much nature related, that mm-hmm. we have this, but at the moment, like, I mean, with the whole also biodiversity crisis not looking too good. But I think like because I was connected and exposed to this when I was a kid, this is also something I really love to protect and restore, and mm-hmm. that there is more like wilderness and everything. So my vision would be going very much into having this natural world. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that there has been a landscape change in Switzerland since when you were a kid to now? Has like the forest cover sort of decreased a lot, or what has it been like?
So the forests haven't actually decreased. They stay pretty the same because we have a very good forest management. But I mean, there of course there has been like more houses built. I mean, mm-hmm. you have like the houses also going like way more into the natural habitats. So like you especially see this also in the countryside. But I think this is not the biggest problem we are facing. It's way more about also the pollutants. For example, the pesticides we put in our mm-hmm. Fields for agriculture. So we have a very destructive way of how we do agriculture. And this leads that actually all our water in Switzerland is polluted, and this is really shocking because, mentioning, I have been drinking this water and we never thought about it, and it's very striking to me that this water is polluted by something we actually put there.
Yeah.
But it's also connected to, like, for example, the loss of insects. I am like really in love with insects. Mm-hmm. So like the loss of insects, but it's something we are doing globally because of all the pesticides we put on the plants.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a huge and very dramatic and rapid change, but we are closing the eyes and not really want to see it.
Yeah.
But it is changing.
Right. Okay, so another thing from your school days, what was your first encounter with sustainability? Would it be the glacier story that you mentioned before, or?
Yeah, I think it's the first time I realized it, really because of these annual cards, and then you really see it. I mean, it's so visual, we talked about like visualization.
Right.
And then you have like these flip cards, you know, like it's a 3D card.
Mm-hmm.
So you see the glacier today and like maybe 30 years back, and you can flip it a little bit, and then you see like how the glacier
has
changing.
Okay.
And this was just so shocking to me, and you see like the whole picture is full of this glacier, and you see like a tiny bit, and it's like, okay, this is today, and what is going to happen in 10 years? And then it's like, okay, the glacier won't be here in 10 years, and this is really hurting, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like it makes me really, really sad to see that this is just gone and you can never restore it. There is no technology in the world who can restore the glaciers.
Mm-hmm.
And also most of our glaciers are actually already dead. I mean, they're still here, tiny bits, But these are leftovers. They're going to be gone. These, yeah. Even if we stop like polluting the environment, like right now, and putting no CO2 in the air, greenhouse gases, the glaciers are gone.
Mm-hmm.
And this makes me really sad because it's a part of our identity. It's a part of what Switzerland is, what my childhood was. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm like 24. I'm not too old. And seeing how this is gone in this small period of time is really frustrating.
Mm-hmm. How has that understanding of sustainability changed over the years?
So in the beginning, I saw it from a very like nature and also natural science perspective. And only
mm-hmm.
later on, I realized that there is a huge social component to it, that like the climate crisis is based on inequalities, is based on like how we humans are treating it. And this is like a social component. This is an economic component to it. I mean, there are, of course, the three dimensions. But we cannot change climate change. We cannot fight it and overcome it if you're not treating these inequalities we are facing
mm-hmm.
all over the world. If you're not facing also the inequalities when it comes to gender, this patriarchal dominant structure, but also like this colonial thinking of we are the owners of the land, we are owner of the planet, and we can just exploit it and it will just do itself. Like, this is all wrong. I mean, we have this colonial thinking when it comes like global north, global south, different regions, but we also have it when it comes to nature, how
mm-hmm.
we can just buy a piece of land and do everything to it. And this is so wrong. And I was not aware of it in the beginning. And in the beginning, it was like, okay, we need natural science solutions and maybe technical solutions. And now it shifted to like, actually, it's about the way, like the social component, how we are living and how we are treating these inequalities.
Mm-hmm. I love that you say the colonial part of things, because I also think that there is a temporal sort of colonial thinking, because essentially what we do today and how we pollute today is how we're colonizing the future, and how we're just using it as a space and throwing it away, and then the people of the future don't have a chance at all.
Mm.
And that kind of, you know, over the time sort of justice element is also so important, because I mean, it's the future generation, it's going to be our kids and our grandkids, right? Okay, so let's move on to a quick little rapid fire round, because I do this in every podcast and I absolutely love it. So let's dig right into it. The first question for you: what's the first word that comes to your mind when I say sustainability?
Inequalities.
Mm-hmm. Second question: your all-time favorite project that you have been involved with?
Honestly, I will always remember the spirit of the Sustainability Week.
Mm-hmm.
Like this point, very the beginning, where we came together, sitting in this room, and we didn't know that it's going to work, but it worked, and now
mm-hmm.
we have it all over the world. And this for me is just it's just amazing, because we can prove we can do it.
Mm-hmm. Love that. Define climate change in one sentence.
Hard one.
This is the hard one. As students of environmental science, I'm like, oh my god, how do I condense everything I know?
I can give you a lot of lectures, but maybe saying the climate is changing all the time, but what is different now is the time scale. So we are changing the climate so rapidly, and this is making the effects for humans and natural systems impossible to survive.
Right. That was very clear. I love that. Absolutely love that sentence. I'm going to use it everywhere now. Be like, yeah, Marie told me this.
Feel free to spread it everywhere.
Don't trademark us, please. Right. Next question. Nobody's perfect. So what is your one sustainability faux pas that you are guilty of?
I mean, there are many things. And I think also like a lot of them are like from the system I live in. And I'm sometimes not able to get out of this
mm-hmm.
system. And then, yeah, I mean, I could just get off and do something different. But maybe I'm also not too vocal or like not too educated about getting off the system. So sometimes I feel like I should do way more to
mm-hmm.
and really like challenge the system. I'm challenging the system, but maybe not on a very core level. Because I know that many of these issues are coming from the system we live in.
Mm-hmm.
Then breaking out of the system, I couldn't let you achieve it everywhere. I mean, like for example, with nutrition and food. I mean, like I changed. Like it's not. I was vegan. I'm at the moment like vegetarian. So I could get out of like our traditional way of eating. Mobility. I mean, of course, like to the US, I'm flying. But I mean, in Europe, I'm taking always the train. I'm like. But yeah, there is something more.
Mm-hmm.
Something much deeper, And I haven't managed to do it. And sometimes it's like, it's really frustrating to get there.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, we have only so many hours in the day, and let's just aim at improving and maximizing those hours that we can, right? Mm. I mean, that's the only way to do it. Recognizing your privilege and then working around that, right? Yeah. Next question. So, we spoke about how in September when you got the green ticket, or shortly before September, and then you became like a media figure in Switzerland as well, right? So, in terms of that happened and you had the chance to talk a lot and, you know, share your opinions on things and stuff. So in that pretense of activism, do you still like the usual print media sort of activism, or do you think the audiovisual format is more of what you're into?
So at least to me, I think the more like audiovisual, also the videos, and also for example this like small catch draw, like this these drawings is really intuitive, and it just sticks with me much longer. So I'm a very visual person, so when I see things I can relate to it, I have like maybe emotions to it, and this is not coming too much when I'm reading the rather objective descriptive news.
All right, last question. What is your favorite sustainable development goal and why?
This is also very hard because
pick
I love
one out of the
like
70
but I would actually go with the educational part, because I think everything is starting with understanding
education,
the issue, and being educated. And if we are educated about all the SDGs, it's like much harder, it's much easier to implement them. I mean, like if we are aware of the climate crisis and we know it, we are not going to debate on it, you know? Like then we're just going to implement everything what is needed. If we know about the inequalities and we are educated about it, we of course are overcoming them. We don't have to debate, because like at the end, like these inequalities are not debating with us. I mean, they are just coming with all the effects they're having. So for me, the most important is education, but also like the education itself need to change, how we are educating, how we are acting upon, how we are as civil servants, how we are as human beings, are acting accordingly. But education is for me the most important.
Love that. I think that's also like top three for me as well, you know. I mean, the climate action one, I'm biased to, like I'm heavily biased to, because that's
of course,
what
yeah.
we study, so. But I don't know. I think, like you said, it begins with education. It all of this begins in school and at home, right? Yeah, so let's dig a little bit into sustainable development goals and sustainability in general. There are 17 of them. It can be quite overwhelming for a person who does not work in the sector or is well-versed with the SDGs, right? So do you think that the 17 SDGs enable the global agenda, or do they just confuse people even more?
I think they have been doing a pretty good job with the communication. Right. I think also like I have it on my jacket, so like the SDG pin, and they have been doing good communication around it. And I mean, it's hard, and of course not everyone knows it, but it is out there, people can use it, people feel empowered to organize like events and organizations. Like there are organizations like the SDG, NGOs and Platform 2030 and so on. So it made its way out there, and the countries are acting accordingly. And I think also it's good that it's incorporating the already existing agendas. But for me, like one part which is missing is about the finance. We have this amazing agenda, but it's going to cost money. And like it was completely left out that there needs to be like, I mean, like there needs to be like alignment of the finances with the global goals. And if we have like the alignments of like all the financial flows with the SDGs, I mean, it's of course, it's much easier to implement them. But also we need, like, especially like the countries, the poorer countries, they need to have money to implement these agendas. And this was for me, like, I don't know why they didn't think about it. Maybe it was too critical. But for me, this is like the only thing what I'm missing about the agenda. And I think like also we who know about the agenda have to be advocate for the agenda, because I think otherwise it's like very holistic. I mean, like also with natural, then the social, the economic sphere. So I think we touch upon like most or almost all the relevant topics we have to, but it needs to spread like way more.
We need to do a lot more. Yeah, totally get you. Right. Even though you're somewhat in the epicenter of the global sustainability work with what you currently do, according to you, where does your work exactly fit in this entire big, you know, overarching sustainability term? What you do, how does that fit into this puzzle that we are sort of making in the world right now?
So many people, when we have been talking over the course of the podcast now, like I'm doing a lot of different work, but for me, it's like very like it all comes together, you know, like I can understand that maybe for people outside it's like, oh my god, she's everywhere, and like this is like all doesn't make sense, but for me it makes a lot of sense. It's all in the balance and in the harmony, and if it would be out of balance and the harmony, I couldn't do it. So it's only working, I can only do what I'm doing because I have like this balance with myself and with the work I'm doing. But it's most of my engagement is actually centered around the SDG 13, around climate action, mm-hmm. because it is the most severe crisis, together with the biodiversity crisis, we are facing. And if we are not managing to irreverse the climate and the biodiversity crisis, we are not going to achieve any of the other goals.
Right.
So this is like absolutely crucial. So we have to put all the emphasis on the climate and the biodiversity crisis and the irreversible. And if we actually irreverse this, many other goals are already getting easier to be achieved, or they're actually already going to be achieved. I mean, like for example, the oceans. We cannot save the oceans if you're not saving the climate crisis.
Exactly.
If you're not overcoming the climate crisis. So I focus on the climate aspect, but then as we've been mentioning, I mean, there is an angle of all the SDGs around it, and I'm mm-hmm. like doing a lot on education, on gender, on agriculture, on different part of innovation and so on. So trying to bring them, like having this perspective on solving the climate crisis would be my core issue.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to be one puzzle piece, right? You could be parts of all the different puzzle pieces. Mm-hmm. And I think I would agree with you on this, because I like being a part of different things as well. Because it gives you, like, keeps you excited and keeps you, like, you know, motivated to do different things.
And we need
things.
The network, honestly. Like, no one can do it alone, and none of the SDGs can, like...
exist alone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You need, like, the network. And, I mean, I think I just love there is, like, this joint, I think, from the Stockholm Resilience Center, where they actually put, like, how the SDGs are, like, interlinked and how they have a positive or a negative effect on each other. And this is so important to understand. I mean, like, we have, like, so little time left. I mean, it's so urgent. We have so little time left. So we have to put all the emphasis on, like, how we are creating this positive ripple effect.
Mm-hmm. Love that. Okay, so what are some of the drivers and barriers to your work?
I mean, my main driver is that I love nature.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that we cannot live as humans without it. I have been just watching yesterday the new movie of David Attenborough about...
I'm going to watch it tonight. That's my plan.
Watch it. Oh, my God. It's, like, really frustrating. Because you basically see, like, how the whole ecosystems are collapsing. And then, I mean, like, it's ending on a positive note, but it's so urgent. So, I mean, my absolute driver is that I love nature. I know we cannot live it out. And I know about it. So yeah. I have responsibility and I have the privilege of being able to spend time on this topic and using my voice. I know that not all the people can do this around the world. And this is really sad. But I have a responsibility of one who can do it, and I have to do it. And I mean, the main barriers are, of course, coming. I mean, you have like only a certain amount of time, and there are so many issues
capacity,
you have to work on. But also, it's very frustrating topic we are working on. I mean, it can be mentally very challenging if you're seeing, like, despite you're getting very active, and I mean, there are hundreds and thousands of people around the world who are active, sometimes like since many years, they may be like old or already like died, and they have been spending their whole life on fighting this crisis, and still people are not listening and decision makers are not taking the right decisions. So I think this is the main barrier of still getting up and keep doing it. And then there's the motivation coming in of having people who are also as committed as you to solve this crisis. And then I mean the system itself puts some limitations. I mean,
right,
that people are not listening because you don't have like a master's degrees, and like, okay, well, I'm working on it. Then there's like the monetary issue. They're like, for me, it's like limited, but other people have like visa issues, there are language issues. So there are many issues, but I think the most challenging is really to keep up your energy in working on a very, very frustrating and a very sad and very draining issue.
Right. I mean, as a youth, I feel like the millennials and Gen Z, we have realized how important mental health is as well, right? And we can get overwhelmed by the amount that's happening in the world right now, let alone climate change, because this is something which is an existential problem. But there are also social injustice everywhere that have been, like, every day you hear about something or the other, and it can get like super overwhelming. And I mean, how do you draw the balance with your mental health and all the work that you do and still be motivated? So it's a hard world for all the youth, you know. But I guess the most important thing is that we're in this together, which is, I think, the most empowering thing about it. Because you and I don't do the same work. We're doing things differently. But at the same time, every time I see you, I know we're doing the same, like, the goal is the same, right? Exactly. And we're in this together. And that gives you so much like empowerment to get through your day and get through your job, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Another thing I wanted to know was what were some of the most innovative ideas or campaigns that you've ever seen in all of your work that you've done until now?
I think they're actually very, like, a lot of, like, low-tech, traditional ways of how we're doing things. And we have to kind of reinvent them.
Right.
So I'm at the moment just working or like thinking about with my partner about some projects like in Ghana, and then like, okay, like how, like for example, sustainable, how we build like houses sustainably. And actually they have been working, for example, like with Ramped Earth and a lot of like very traditional ways that there's actually no, for example, cooling because it's very hot in summer. And I think it's all about reconsider these traditional old ideas, which are very often actually very, very low tech, and see this as a solution. Also when it comes to farming, I mean, like organic permaculture, this is like how like Earth was here for thousands of years, like everything lived in coexistence, and then we came in and just wanted to have like monoculture and thought like, okay, this is going to work, but it's clearly not working. I mean, you have to put pesticides, and even then it's not working. So it's also there, like we have to like not reinvent because it was already there, but we have to reconsider the solutions as the solutions. And of course there are probably some high-tech solutions we need, but it's all about like really going back to what our grandparents have been doing and doing it maybe in a more sustainable way. I mean, like we can still tweak it around, but there are many ideas which have been here and worked until like some 50 years ago, and then somehow they got forgotten before we actually have been here, so we don't know them. But there are still people on this planet who know these ideas, and we have to get this knowledge and put it in place today and build up this stronger resilience, because it has been strong before, right? So it can also be strong now.
Or even find ways to use this knowledge that already exists and sort of mash it with, make a hybrid of like the modern ways and modern techniques, and sort of come up with like better solutions even, right? Absolutely love that. Yeah. You know what? This reminds me. So when I was working for Africa Climate Week, one of the things, one of the projects that we wanted to put out there quite a bit was this bamboo bicycle thing, which is a huge thing in Ghana. Because in Accra was where the first Climate Week, the Africa Climate Week was. It was so interesting to me because, I mean, it's so intuitive. It's such basic natural material, so low tech, like you mentioned before. And it functions really well. It just blew my mind. But I completely get what you're saying with like these low-tech solutions that should be put out there.
And they're also cheaper, you know, like it's somehow like also like with the SDGs, like the more it costs, the better it must be. And this is so wrong. I mean, there are so many solutions which actually cost nothing and even are cheaper than what we're like business as usual. But it needs to like have a mind shift that we can implement it. But also like in agriculture, also like in mobility, there are so many ideas we could implement right now. They're already proven, they have been there for very long, to make things work. And I think it's really about this, and this transformation, this change is possible. All the solutions are out there, and actually it wouldn't cost us that much. We just have to acknowledge and have the courage to implement it, and that's it.
Right. What has been the most rewarding project of your professional career until now? Of all the work that you've done, the most rewarding thing that you've done?
So since I mentioned before that young people are not often in the decision-making process, I think for me the most rewarding until now was when I was able actually to be in the decision-making process when I was in the COP delegation. Not because I was there, but because I saw that government, which is like very old, I think like all of them are below above 50 or 60, so like very traditional mindset very often, but they saw the importance of having a young person there. And for me this was the important, that it's not about me, it's about the fact that they acknowledge that the young person can bring something to the table, that we actually have the courage to put this person there who has been, as you mentioned, I mean, was very outspoken against the government, against like a lot of like the laws and regulations we are having, but still putting this person there and trusting this person that this person can make a difference, can be supportive, despite she has been very like vocal about us and blaming them for their inaction. And I think this is what we need. We need this courage from both sides to be open to work together. And only if young people and the older generation are open to come together and fight the crisis together, we can make it. And very often it's like the young people, and then there is the older people, and they do their own thing, and we do our own thing. And only when we are coming together, it's going to be fruitful, and it's going to bring the urgency to the table. And I think this needs to happen way more also at the UN. It cannot be that only the young people are coming there like as interns or as consultants. We have to have young people in the top decision-making offices, and we have to have the courage to put young people there. So for me, this was very rewarding, because I could see that there is sometimes a window of a momentum and a window of opportunities, and then we have to go in there and have to prove that we can. We have to overprove. Like, this is also like big responsibility, yeah, because like it put a lot of pressure on you. That yes, this is exactly what we need, and make it a good experience for everyone. And I personally think only through this collaboration we can make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely love that. Brings me to my penultimate question. So I know recently you were selected, remind me again, was it the Real Food System something?
So it's the United Nations Food System Summit happening next year.
Yeah, all right. So congratulations, first of all. So I assume that is what is next in your life, but let me just open the question to you. What's next in Marie-Claire Graff's life?
So I have been shifting a lot of focus around the food systems, because the food system is the number one solution to the climate crisis and many other crises. For example, also like diseases, but also biodiversity I've been talking about. And since I want to focus on the solutions, not only on like just repeating the problem all the time, I have been shifting my focus through the Real Food Systems movement, and also recently got awarded as a champion. So this is a network of around like 60 people who have been championing this the solution, driving the food system towards a more resilient and sustainable future food system. And there will be the summit next year. And so my part is really of bringing in as many young people and the ideas of young people, which already existing, especially this also comes in. There are like very, like a lot of young people around the world who do like low tech traditional systems in a sustainable way, but they are not getting the attention because it's low tech, because it's not like super crazy fancy. But actually this is like the fanciness, like, oh my god, like how innovative is this if you can do with very little like so much, and it's like sustainable, and it's good for the ecosystem, it's good for you, it's healthy for everyone. So like I focus a lot on this food system transformation and really like accelerating this revolution driven by young people as a solution for our personal health, for the health, for the soils, for the water, for the planet, for the climate. And with this, I mean, we're really going to achieve the agenda, but we have to be very quick. And I think there's the central of having young people empowered and that their voice is heard also next year.
Well, all the best to you. First of all, congratulations. Then all the best. And I just know Marie's just gonna change. Like, you're a global change maker, obviously. So this is gonna be great. I'm just so bloody excited to see everything that you have to do, to be honest. Like, it's just, I'm like a fangirl on the side. I'm like a hype woman on the side. Let's call me that, right? So for the closing, I always do this at the end of every podcast. So you know how we get these Netflix and music and book recommendations from our friends and family and our network, right? So I wanted to start somewhat of a sustainability exchange on this podcast, and because it really is about sussing it out, right? So what is one sustainable thing that you would recommend to everyone listening? It could be a book, a movie, a documentary, a podcast, a habit, anything.
Just because, like, yeah, I've been watching the movie yesterday from David Attenborough now I have to remember, like, the complete title. I think, like, The Life on Earth.
Life on Earth.
I think something like this along the lines. It's called, but you will find it, it's on Netflix. And it's really shocking. Honestly, like, the first half of the movie is, like, just... So basically, like, he is 93 and he's showing, like, how the world changed from when he was born to today. I mean, he's changing about the population around the world, like this line of biodiversity, and also like the rise of CO2 in the air. And I think this is like one human lifespan. And seeing like his exciting life and how he was like seeing all these animals which are not here. He was seeing with his own eyes like ecosystems which are like completely like destroyed, and there is like nothing there now. And this is not like something we talk about like 120 years, but this is like what like he saw, and this person is still here. And I think this is really, really powerful. And we see like all these changes from when he was born to now. And then it's like, okay, well, I am like 24. Like, how is the world going to look like? And the second point of the movie is all about like solutions, like what we can do to really like rebuild the world, like how we can put like the sustainability into action. And this is really, really powerful. So he was doing actually one movie before about the climate crisis, and now he was doing one about the biodiversity crisis. And for me, like like seeing these movies is really powerful because you have the natural aspect. Mm-hmm. You see the videos and you see destruction, but also you see how like a sustainable, healthy life on planet look like. So go and watch the movie.
For God's sake, he's 93. He could have been retired and doing whatever he wants in life, but no, he's dedicated his entire life to...
He just joined Instagram like some
weeks
ago.
So
like...
cute, I love it.
And he's already like 6.5 million followers. It's crazy.
Exactly.
Like...
I was like, this is my favorite boomer on the platform.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. But you know, the kind of work that he's doing is amazing. Like
there
was also one with the, the royal family where all the kids asked him questions.
Mm.
And it was just the most adorable thing ever to have that, you know, Princess Charlotte and like Prince, what's his name? I don't know the...
I don't know, but
yeah. But anyways, you get the royal family, right?
Yeah.
For them, they're like, what, 6, 7, 8 years old? And then asking him, and him trying to break it down for like a 6, 7-year-old kid, right? It's so important to have that. And doing it so like lovingly.
Mm.
And having that, you know, generational understanding as well, right? It's not just that, oh, we don't like the younger generation. Or we don't like this and that. It's a very... holistic, wholesome kind of situation.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I would, I'm going to go watch the movie today. It was anyways on my agenda. I was like, yeah, this is perfect. I'm going to record the podcast with Marie, then I'm going to go home and I'm going to be in the mood and I'm going to watch it.
Perfect.
But yeah, this works out really well. But Marie, thank you so much. I have learned so much from this entire chat that we've had over the past 1 hour. And I just really wish you all the best. But yeah, I absolutely love everything that you do. And I hope that you do even more and find more hours in the day to do more, you know. But yeah, thank you so much, Marie. And I will see you around Zurich soon, always, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, thank you so much. And I also, like, to you and everyone who was also listening, I mean, like, never be afraid of asking.
Yeah.
Because I think, like, this is, like, where it started. I mean, like, everyone has questions to ask, but very often we're afraid to ask, and it happened to me as well. I was like, oh my God, all these people, like, walking around in suit and ties, and I'm like, I can't ask any question.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized, like, they actually don't know everything, but we can ask them questions. And also, like, if like you or anyone else has questions, like, please do reach out and I will find the time to respond to all your questions. Or when I don't know the answer, like, I have probably someone in the network who knows the answer.
Mm-hmm.
So never be afraid of asking and speaking up.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to be a part of Youngo, I will put down all the details when I
release it. Perfect. I will send you the form. And I can
So I'll put the link down in all the social media. So if anyone listening is interested in working with Youngo, I would highly recommend it, and the link will be provided.
So that was Marie Claire on Suss It Out. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you really liked it, please share it with your friends and family or anyone, to be honest. It would mean a lot to me if you could share this. Spread the word about the podcast. I hope you learned something new from it, because I for sure learned a lot out of this. Until the next time, this is Suss It Out with Radhi Tata.